Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's the Mitchin Podcast.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to the Mitchin. We are a weekly food podcast coming to you live out of Sydney. My name is Andrew Levins. My good friend and co-host is back, everybody. Mitchell Orr.
Back. Hi, Levs.
Back after a week in Adelaide, and he brought a little friend with him.
9 days in fucking Adelaide.
From Arana Restaurant in Adelaide. I was like, is it like tortilla or like yellow?
It's just jock. That's fine. Let's
okay,
just leave it there.
Well, you're trying to attempt your last name.
Zofrilo.
So okay, jock it is. Jock from Arana Restaurant in Adelaide has joined us, and it is customary that I dog your last name when you come on this podcast.
Yeah,
unless your name is Orr.
Yeah, nice. I'm pretty sure you've even dogged that a few times.
I haven't listened to all the podcasts, I don't feel victimized. Thank you. Not singled out in any way.
So we're going to be talking about the festival that Mitch was down in Adelaide for. It's called Tasting
Australia.
And
what was your actual title for it? Celebrity curator.
I could never get it right. Creative curator. I don't know, something like that.
But Jock basically,
it's harder to pronounce than your last name.
Yeah. Much harder. Yeah.
Jock basically put the guest chef lineup together for the festival.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So this is the least you can do. Pay him
yes,
back.
Yes, exactly.
Getting him on this lucrative podcast market. So we're going to be talking about the Tasting Australia Festival. I don't know. I'm hoping that it's actually just going to be like weird gossip and like what fucked up things happened to Australia's drunkest chefs.
No, I didn't actually get that loose, but I mean, I went. I don't hang around for the looseness, but I've got a couple of funny stories.
I'm sure Jock does.
I've got a couple of funny stories out of it, yeah.
And speaking of loose stories, later in the episode, we might have a very special and beloved guest from the Mitchin timeline.
Drop by
for a rant.
Yeah.
So look forward to that. But first, hot off the press. Not really. It happened a couple of days ago, but it's probably the funniest thing that's happened in Australian food. The ongoing train wreck that is... someone whose name I proudly dog every time I try and pronounce it, George Colombaris.
We're really going to get sued soon.
No, because I fuck his name up every time I say it, it's a different person. It's totally covered.
You kind of got it right that time, I think.
Yeah, fuck. Yeah. Okay, I'll try harder to fuck it up next time. Yeah. So we've been reporting on his, you know, lack of paying his staff and doing what a good boss should do. He's recently unearthed in the news as someone that owes a lot of money to his staff and apparently is trying to do right by it now, but there's a lot of denying going on and basically it doesn't look good for the dude. You think we're going at him too hard? Well, at a footy game over the weekend in Melbourne, people saw him. For whatever reason, all the MasterChef judges were just like on the fucking field for some reason.
It was the A-League grand final.
Oh, of course.
So it was like And then, obviously, I think it must have been on the same channel that whatever MasterChef is on or something. So, it was all tied in.
Matt Preston lay on the ground and they got to kick the ball off from his stomach.
Did they?
No. I would pay to see that, though. That'd be amazing.
It wouldn't surprise me.
A-plus league. From the stands, a bunch of locals and football supporters just started chanting at George, pay your staff. And then... old mate got quite heated.
Yeah, he got a little bit upset.
And there's footage of him shoving someone that was yelling at him and saying, come on the field then, come on the field. And then he gets kind of like slowly taken away by police.
Yeah.
Where does this end up? How far does this go?
I don't know. Like, it's not a good look to get heated when you've just got a big TV show starting and that kind of thing. And everyone has a phone with a camera these days. But, you know, what's a bit of... shit talk on the football field, you know? Like, you got to expect it from the crowd, don't you?
Yeah. Especially when
you can't get heated.
Like, it's something like he is, like, even no matter how good his intentions are of getting out of the wrong, he is in the wrong in this situation.
I mean, he said in his quotes that his... there were some insults, some personal insults and insults thrown towards his family.
Right.
Which, I don't know, there maybe there were, and then, you know...
Let's speculate on what they might have been. Yeah. What do you think they said, Mitch?
Definitely not going to do
Jock,
that.
Jock, any... Look, I didn't know anything about this, actually, at all until last night about 1 o'clock in the morning, and my wife showed it to me, and she made out that, you know, it was this big deal that he'd gone to fight the football, whatever. And then I seen the video clip and I was like, he just gave him a little pussy shove. Like, no, it wasn't a 1-inch punch or nothing. It was just like a little shove.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you know, in all fairness to the guy, if somebody had started abusing my family, I would have snapped probably quicker than that.
Yeah.
To be in all fairness. The trouble is for George and for MasterChef, other crap TV shows are available. You know, that's both George and Matt Preston within 7-day space in the newspaper for all the wrong reasons.
Did you hear about this?
No, I didn't.
So this kind of ties into South Australia as well. But Matt Preston and Marco Pierre White's son are embroiled in a Twitter beef.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
About what? So look it up, or is it more non-event?
There's, I think, something on Pedestrian about it. Basically, Matt had a little dig on a TV show about Marco.
Oh, it was on a radio show.
On a radio show about Marco Pierre White Jr.'s face tattoos, representing him basically being a dead shit.
And then
Marco Pierre White Jr. went on a massive Twitter rant and basically just abusing the shit out of Matt Preston.
I had the UK press. It's quite funny. As soon as I had the UK press, Marco's son just lost through it because he's pretty fiery, like his old man, and then went from there. And then obviously somebody said to Marco when he was down in Adelaide, you know, how come you've left Channel 10 to go to Channel 7 or whatever, and then he had a crack at Matt Preston, and everyone heard it, the press overheard it, it was in the newspaper the next day. So but you know Marco was quite right. At the end of the day, he's a father protecting his son, and it doesn't matter how out of control his son is, or how out of control you think he might be. Your old man's always going to stick up for you. That's the way it is.
Yeah. It's so good. He called Matt Preston a fat fuck and said he was going to slap him up.
there's a couple of good ones in there.
Look it up.
Yeah.
There you go.
Quite a bit of gossip.
So MasterChef in the weeds is what I would say. Yeah. In the papers for all wrong reasons. Well, in its first week of airing.
That's the thing though. You can always relaunch MasterChef.
Of course.
I don't think anyone watches... Who the fuck watches MasterChef for those three guys?
Still over 1 million people.
Well, but that's not why. It's a comedy.
I don't know. They haven't been fired as the host yet. So they must think that there's something to do with it.
And they've got sponsors.
Yeah. Well, that's it. You don't know what the sponsorship will...
I'm a Gary man myself. Every week I tune in. Gary. Give me more Gary, I reckon.
I don't think...
Less George, less Matt, all Gary.
He could easily carry his own show, I reckon.
Gary?
Yeah. The three of them. Yeah, probably.
Oh, really?
I reckon he probably could. You know, and he's probably the most likable out of the three of them.
Well, he's just the least... Of a word that I probably shouldn't call three people.
That's enough.
Let's move on before we get hit with a defamation suit.
But let it be known that all three of us are Gary men. So speaking of Marco Pierre White, he was, I guess, the kind of highest caliber chef, best known chef that was part of Tasting Australia.
Aside from Mitch,
to the general public, and then Anna Ross was also the other big name, I'd say.
Yep.
Yeah.
Ultimately, my job was to curate the talent lineup and the dinners that they did. So, you know, Anna Ross is a you know, the best female chef this year according to that list.
And she was just here for the 50 best.
For the 50 best, yeah.
And those flyers up.
And you know, Marco's obviously a very well-known chef. Everyone, all chefs, bought his White Heat when it first came out. Yada yada. And so, you know, great ticket seller. And then, you know, selecting chefs from sort of around the country as well, of who are sort of men of the moment. Mitch, obviously, you've been one of them, and Clayton, surprise visit from Pazzy.
Fantastic.
Annalise Gregory. And yeah, so there was a good lineup of chefs and some really interesting dinners. People would abnormally not cook with each other, which was nice.
Yeah. So like Anna Ross, Paul Carmichael and Jock did a dinner.
Awesome.
Clayton, Marco and Jock did a dinner. Jock put himself in every dinner. Jock, myself and Marco did a dinner with the guys from Fino. Yeah, there was a pretty huge lineup. And then there was a big like party.
Josh Nyland did one.
Annalise did one together. Yeah. And then like with local Adelaide talent as well.
Like Duncan.
Just Duncan.
And Big Dunk.
Yeah.
Big Dunk. He cooked with Fardor.
Lennox, yeah.
Which was Lennox and I can't remember who else.
Yeah, it was a pretty chock-a-block week of events.
Duncan's done three episodes and I can now kind of pronounce his last name. So you just need to do two more and I'll be almost there.
I think all the events tied in with actual Testing Australia sold out well in advance of the event. And most of the dinners, like, you know, your dinner at
the
Fino,
satellite things, yeah.
All the central dinners sold out, and the big ones certainly sold out within minutes. Yeah. And then the satellite dinners were sort of about 70%. Booked by the end of it. If you take all of them, there was a couple of them were cancelled, so it brought the average down a little bit. But yeah, it was great. You know, over 50,000 people through the door in the town square, which is pretty big for Adelaide.
Yeah, it's huge.
So yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it was a good week. Got a round of golf in, which is always important.
Excellent.
Yeah. And then so we got down there on Saturday and drove straight out to the Barossa, to Seppertsfield Winery, and then basically just hung out and did burnouts in the Audi that Audi was nice enough to supply for us, which Jock doesn't want me to say. No, you can't do burnouts in them anyway. It's all we'll drive. And then we did a dinner for 350 people on the Sunday night, which was pretty hectic.
How was that for you? You don't cook for 350 people, neither do I, actually. Well, so
yeah, the most we sort of cook for is 120 in a night, but even then, you're not prepping for 120 and it's staggered. So when they asked for the recipes, I'm like, I don't know how much fucking food I need for 350 people. I'm like, you know, here's 10. You guys multiply it and work it out. And we ended up having plenty of food.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I did a King George Whiting dish.
You would have had to order upwards of 35 boxes of Jats.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I didn't have to do a canapé this time, luckily. But I took the easy route of doing the first course after canapés, so I could do a cold raw fish dish. Mm-hmm. So I did King George Whiting, green olive puree, and fried curry leaf.
Yeah.
Pretty easy to execute for 350 people. No cooking, no nothing. We just sort of brined the fish. And on the night, Marco came in and introduce himself, and you know, there's quite a few Marco stories. It's really good. So
the drinking game, do a shot every time Marco, there's a good Marco story.
So Marco, you know, we came in,
do
and had
a shot
a chat.
Every time Marco is mentioned not actually doing any work.
No. So he came in, had a chat, la la la, and then we were plating my dish up, and he's like looking at the dish. He's like, oh, you know, what's going on? I was like, you know, this is what we did, blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, very clever dish, very clever. We are very easy to execute for 350 people, very consistent, very clever dish. I was like, cool. Thanks, Marco. That's really nice to hear. The next night, we threw a party at Sunny's Pizza, me, Duncan, Victor, and Pussy, just for like fun, not an official Tasting Australia event, but just a fun thing to do on a Monday night. And Marco rolled through. So Marco had dinner, made him a carbonara, blah, blah, blah. And then Marco and Duncan were sitting outside. And I was like, I guarantee you Marco does not fucking remember me after spending 6 hours with him yesterday. I guarantee he's got no fucking idea who I am. So I went outside and said, hey, Marco. He's like, hello, boy. How are you? You know? I was like, I'm good, Marco. How was your dinner? How was your carbonara? Yeah, it was really good. You know, the pasta was very al dente. Some might say too al dente, but that's how I grew up with it. La, la, la. And then Marco and Duncan were talking about the next night's dinner, which was Jock, Clayton and Marco's dinner in the glass house. And Duncan had done his dinner the night before. So Marco was asking Duncan how the dinner had went and what needed, you know, what Marco needed to know. And Duncan was like, oh, yeah, you know, it was like pretty easy. I did it to share because, you know, it was a bit easier for the numbers and stuff like this and la, la, la. And then Marco's manager came over and just out of nowhere was like, Marco, your dish at last night's dinner, the best by far, so good. We'll get onto that later. So after this, this reminded Marco of the dinner the night before. And Marco says to Duncan, "Duncan, you wouldn't believe some of the food at this dinner. You wouldn't believe it." I was embarrassed, Duncan. And I was like, oh, this is great. He doesn't have any fucking idea who I am. This could really go either way. Duncan, raw fish and curry leaf. What is that? How does that work, Duncan? Tell me. Raw fish and curry leaf, what is that? We're talking about my dish, which the night before he told me was very clever, was now telling Duncan that it was a piece of shit. So I was like, oh, Marco.
Did you let on that was your dish?
No. I just let it go. I just had a little chuckle in my head and then went back inside to tell Bussy about it. I was like, fuck. So good, Marco. So good.
He was like your guy when you were growing up, right?
No, not at all. Like,
the first cookbook you ever lent me when we
was Waheen?
Yeah,
was it? Well, Marco is the dude. Like, without Marco, no one would probably give a fuck about chefs. So, you know, when you look at White Heat, like, it's really old school, but it's still pretty cool. And you can see the attraction and why people became interested in cooks. So, when you did your dinner at Glasshouse, we got given the 25th anniversary edition of White Heat. And you flick through it and it's like fucking crazy plate ups and all these mad terrines and this and that. And then for the dinners, Marco decided that he was just going to cook polenta and wild mushrooms. So there's a bit of disconnect from what you see when you get this book and then to polenta and mushrooms. So anyway, Marco cooked polenta and mushrooms for 350 people at our dinner in the Barossa. I'm not going to besmirch him too much, but it wasn't great. There was a lot of truffle oil involved and a lot of baby parsley microherbs involved, which are two of my least favorite things. So Marco's sous chef had about six massive fucking pots of polenta going and had six volunteers standing there stirring this polenta for about 3 hours before the dish was ready to go. And they all looked like they were about to keel over and die. And every now and then Marco would come in and just laugh at them. about they were just like arms about to fall off whisking this polenta. Anyway, it came time to serve Marco's dish. So Marco, myself and Jock were putting the finishing touches on Marco's polenta. A couple of guys would put the polenta into a dish and the mushrooms would come from being held hot in the oven and we would scoop them up with our hands and put them on top of the polenta, parmesan cheese, olive oil, parsley cress. Pretty simple. Marco got right into it. We'd be plating it up and every now and then, too much fucking olive oil. Don't drown it in fucking olive oil. More fucking cheese. Fucking less herbs.
Less cheese.
Fucking less cheese. More olive oil. Get the fucking mushrooms over here. So I'd get to the end of a tray of mushrooms and I'd have the mushrooms scooped up in my hands, ready to put on a plate. And Marco would come over, take the mushrooms out of my hand and put it on his side. His side of the dish. I'd be like, more mushrooms, please. And then if Marco wanted something and it happened to be past me, he would just like gut me out of the way or just like reach straight over me. And it was fucking hilarious to be pushed around by Marco in 2017. In 1993, it might not have been hilarious, but in 2017, it was pretty funny. And then at one point, one of the guys helping was putting parsley cress on top of the dish and Marco lost it. What are you fucking doing? It's not a fucking herb garden. Loosen your fingers up. Don't fucking be a fucking pig. And the guy's just like, all right. I don't know what the difference was between the last 10, but okay, Marco. Yes, chef. No worries. And then, so it all went out and Marco was very chuffed. Jock, see that? Nice and hot for everybody. Goes out. What did that take? 10 minutes? Very good. Went outside for a cigarette. So we went outside to join him just for a chat. And then the chef who was helping, who Marco just yelled about the parsley cress at, walked past to go to the bathroom. And Marco was like, Jock, I just fucking bollocked that guy. And Jock was like, why? He's just here to help. Why do you need to bollock him? And Marco's like, he's a fucking pig. He's a fucking grub, Jock. You should have seen the way he was putting the herbs on, Jock. He's a fucking pig. Meanwhile, Marco's in his white apron is brown. It's just like covered in mushroom oil and parmesan cheese and parsley cress from wiping his hands on his apron, and the bench after we'd finished had looked like someone plated the polenta and the mushrooms up on the bench. It was like everywhere, and Marco was like just giving it to this poor guy for being a pig. Meanwhile, Marco's like brown from mushrooms.
Digging in mouth.
Yeah, it was so good. It was so good. That's my Marco POY experience. Being told one day it was clever, the next day it was shit, being pushed around.
Knowing who you are, not knowing who you are.
And then through the rest of the week, he saw me enough times that he'd give me a little nod and a little smile as he walked past. Yeah, really, really, really amusing.
I really wish he started calling you Curry Lee.
Yeah.
All you did for the rest of it was take the piss out of me because I just had a permanent frown in my face because there was something that I had to deal with.
The next morning, I walked out of the elevator in the hotel and Jock like came across and says, "Just give me a. I just need a cuddle. Just give me a hug."
So, Jock, when you bring someone out. He's not essentially your responsibility, but you were responsible.
He kind of was by the end of it,
right? Yeah. So yeah, I don't know, like, how much of your responsibility is someone?
Look, when you invite anyone to come and cook in your town, then they're your responsibility. And Mitch, all the guys were my responsibility ultimately, and no more so than him. And when he rang, he was filming Hell's Kitchen in Sydney or Melbourne. I think it was Sydney. Sydney, he was filming Hell's Kitchen, so he'd been here for 8 weeks. And then he was bored with Bondi, he decided, and so he rang up and said, "I'm going to come down early." And so he came down a week early. And so you can imagine an event like that, it's a bit of organisation that happens before it. You've got to get your shit together a little bit before it starts.
Yeah.
And I get a phone call to say he's arriving a week early just to hang out. And it's like, yeah, and I'm on the phone going, yeah, you can, yeah, sure, why not? You know, come down. So, you know, change the tail, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, he's, you know, he wants to have a look around, go and eat in some places, you know. And there was, you know, there's guys like him who are very eccentric now. Like, you know, if you look at Marco back in the 90s, yeah, he was, everyone, the kitchen's run on fear, 3 Michelin stars, all the rest of it. It's very different now. He's an eccentric old dude who used to have 3 stars. It doesn't make him, you know, he's one of the best bosses I ever had. He, without question, is one of the best chefs of his time.
Where did you work for him at?
The restaurant Marco POY, Criterion, Quavaris, yeah, Les Saveurs, a bunch of them. But he's now an eccentric guy who still gives huge amounts back to the industry, but he's in a bubble, like totally disconnected from shit today. And so then he makes really brazen statements like, you know, and Jasmine Indian restaurant is awesome, but, you know, is it the best meal that he's had in Australia? I don't know if you can say that. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's good. I love it. And I love the guys that run it. But, it's, you know, he plays that card where it's, you know, then ultimately he'll say something that's safe. You know, he's not upset anyone by saying that Jasmine curry is the best meal he had in Australia. Do you see what I mean? Mm. So, and like any superstar, they need looking after. You need to be there all the time. And so then, you know, there's always a hand grenade every day. There's 3 or 4 hand grenades get thrown your way, and you have to try and straighten it out and bring Eagles back into where they should be. And then there's the manager, his agent, who's George, Slippery George, we call him, who is lovely. I love the guy. But, you know, there's always... It's not just as easy as, you know, Mitch, we need to do this, that, or the other. There's always 155 billion conversations that you need to have in order to sort shit out. So it's tough, really tough.
I have to interrupt just for one moment. We've got a very special guest who's recently been in the wars. come over here,
Jakey. Come over here, Jakey.
Been in the wars. The Korean rice cake wars. He'd thrown in his book.
What have you done to yourself?
I deep fried a couple of rice cakes and it exploded in my face. Hello, mate.
Jesus, how are you?
Yeah, I'm alright.
Jake from Mary's is here, everybody. Jake's
hello, everybody.
Jake from Mary's, the unicorn. Oh, we actually record this, the Mitch and every week above the unicorn. So it's sad that we haven't had you in every single week.
I've been really mortally offended up until right now. And then I just like have the gate crash to get in.
So, Jake, before you landed yourself in hospital for deep
horrific burns.
You're covered in... So they're all like first degree, yeah?
Wow. Yeah, they're really, really superficial. At home, sober. So fuck me, you know? Fuck you, Jake Smyth. Yeah, it's my own fault. Completely. I just deep fried some fucking rice cakes. I was like, oh yeah, fuck, I'll deep fry some rice cakes. And I was leaned over and they fucking bang. Smoke, and then a series of them, but the first one just copped me a beauty, a fucking beauty right in my fucking head.
Whoa.
So straight into the bath, blah, 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 water, water, water. And then my wife's like, do we need to go to hospital? I was like, yeah, definitely need to go to hospital. She's like, all right, we'll drive. I was like, no, get the ambulance. Because I don't want these burns to get worse. I got to get the water. Secretly knowing they're going to medicate me heavily. So I was not sober for very long. Oh, I loved it. Anyway, that's my head.
Before that happened, you were also in Adelaide. And before we get to this story, yes, of why you were there, Jock, you mentioned hand grenades.
Yes.
What was your favorite hand grenade that you could share with us before we hear from Jake?
Can we talk about the panda theory?
Yeah, so I liken all these super famous guys to pandas, and it was the same. We had giant pandas, you know, like pandas, right? That's what they're called, the black and white, yeah, giant pandas. And so the guys from Top Gear were exactly the same, those three fuckers.
They were your guests at Tasting Australia last year?
No, they weren't, but I've had them in town before, and it's like everyone goes, whoa, the panda's like, wow, the panda, get photographs, selfies, fucking everything, the panda, right? But the panda doesn't actually fucking do anything at all. It just sits there. It doesn't do anything. And the panda doesn't move of its own accord. It doesn't feed itself. It doesn't do fucking shit. So you need to do everything around the fucking panda so as everyone can go, whoa, the panda. You know, like, it's fucking frightening.
Like one of those killer whales.
And so when, so you can only, yeah, exactly. You can only have so many fucking pandas at an event, seriously, because it's just all time consuming. Yeah. And so, yeah, anyway, hand grenades, favorite one would have been, without question, the Tuesday Marco's dinner with Clayton, where there was a double hand grenade that day. So there was, everything had been planned. We're plating up individually because it's much easier. So you can imagine if you're feeding 160 people, there are people who have booked as a 2, a 4, a 6, a fucking 12, whatever, right? So all the seating arrangements are different. So the plates were just supposed to be individual. That's how Duncan fucked himself the night before, because he was doing shared plates, which in theory is a great idea if everybody's happy to share. But when people are paying $190 bucks, they don't want to be sticking the spoon in and sharing with someone they don't know. And so, you know, it made for a difficult evening for them. So, of course, then Marco gets drunk with Duncan, and Duncan says, shared plates, blah, blah, blah. And then Marco decides, in all his wisdom, whatever o'clock that was at Sonny's while he was drunk, that he would change to share plates. And I was like, no, don't. Like, so I just got told, forget everything, all the plates that have been ordered, forget all the portioning, forget everything, we're changing it all to shared, which was a bit of a problem, obviously, given the night before, etc. So anyway, that's fine, he's gonna do it. And it was the same dish from Sunday. Well, there's two, he did two dishes that night, the mushrooms polenta and also a lamb dish. So it was the old lamb rump, beans, whatever.
How was it?
It was great, perfectly cooked. It was perfect. It was beans and lamb with a killer sauce. It was very simple, very nice. However, one of those was, I mean, like you said, it was nothing like what was in the book. So it wasn't, you know, like Clayton did a killer dish, looked beautiful. You know,
simple food.
Yeah. Simple food, and he was just
the name now.
Yeah, very, fuck it up. Very obsessive about heat retention.
Yes,
and all the plates. So anyway, he decided that only him and I would plate up on the pass. So he shut the doors to the kitchen and locked us in, turned the fans off, so the kitchen would be like a gazillion degrees to retain the heat in the plates. Jock. Yes, Marco, no problem. And then it was just him and I plating 160 plates. And so Taris from A Quarter Barrels was stood in the corner, like in a state of fucking shock, just what was going on, like red hot fucking beans out of the water, double hands. And Marco being Marco was like, use two hands, you've got two fucking hands, use two hands. Like, yeah, using two hands, burning both of them at the same time. Thank you. Awesome, fucking love it. Great. More, please, Marco. But you know, it
don't look like this.
Yeah,
no,
your hands look way better than Jake's face.
So to be fair, they did before he burned himself too.
So that's it. But I mean, for anyone, you know, like, I've got to say though, for all the Cordon Bleu kids, the TIFF kids, you know, who came and worked for free, that was something they'll remember for a long time in Adelaide, for
especially
sure.
One one that got bollocked.
Yeah, well, well, this is it. And it's one of those things I was saying to Mitch, is like, you know, Marco's mid-service, and for what, he'll ask for something completely fucking randomly. He doesn't need it. Like, he'll say, a spoon, spoon, give me a spoon, 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 spoon. And he'll be looking at someone, like, shouting spoon, spoon, spoon repeatedly, fucking 15 times a second. And then this Corum Blue guy's just like that, like a rabbit in the fucking headlights. Like, no fucking idea what's going on. And then he'll turn around to me, and it's my fault. Jock, what is it doing? It's just, Mark, he's in a state of shock. Like, it's taking time for him to understand that you've spoken to him, first of all. Secondly, he's wondering why you want a spoon when you're saying, use your hands, use your hands. He's confused. You know, it's perfectly normal.
An aggressive panda. Fight panda. He's a fight panda.
So on the Saturday night, we did a bit, Jock and I did a big event, the final night, Chef's Supper Club, and then Jakey, you were down in Adelaide as well for one event out in the Adelaide Hills.
They tell me I was.
Yeah.
Those were not there for very long. I don't remember a great deal of it.
What time do you remember up till?
Oh, 7:30?
I reckon. What time did the event start?
Oh, they'd said 4 o'clock, but I got there at 6. I read the thing wrong. So all the guys were there, and I turned up, and they were in the shit. So Tom Shawbrook had dropped me, and his great wisdom had dropped us like a jerry can of red wine.
Wow.
And so I drank that in about an hour with Kenny, and then I just stopped working about 7:30. I couldn't do it anymore. I was very fucking pissed. So
what were you supposed to be doing?
Cooking burgers, of course. It doesn't take a high level of skill, just a lot of aggression, evidently. Yeah, yeah.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
No sobriety. And I'd never burn myself or hurt myself. And then, yeah, see, now, don't be sober when you fucking cook.
So was that part of Tasting Festival as well?
Yeah, it was, yeah. So I was a Taris-led event.
Okota Barrels.
Yeah, and they did fresh, it was a whole range of things. 30 winemakers from the hills and surrounds from South Australia doing fresh wines. So wines that were had just finished ferments, or maybe some of them, maybe not even quite that. But the idea was just to kind of show the vintage, show super fucking fresh, vibrant, alive wines that had just been done before any tricks can get pulled. You know, because for all the terms of natural winemaking, there's tricks. There's winemaking tricks. There's no subterfuge with chemicals, but, you know, they've got a few things up their sleeve. So this was just about seeing what it is right now, and it was amazing. It was so great.
Juice and burgers.
Yeah, so exactly. Fresh, boozy juice and some burgers and, you know, a fat guy yelling at you with who's got a, looks like he's holding just fucking finished a meth session and is picking the bugs out. So I was pretty, I imagine it was quite confronting for quite a few people.
Yeah. Why is that guy whose car looks like he's broken? Yeah, he looks like his car's broken down, just wielding a jerry can around the site.
Exactly. What did he just yell at me? He said he was going to fuck me. That guy's aggressive and nasty. I didn't want any spoons though.
Did they?
and I thank you for that.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, because I would have got a phone call. Spoons, he wants spoons. Fuck.
Jack's might sing something about spoons, but we can't really pick it up. Has these gauze and bandages.
Did Taris end up making the world's biggest field blend?
Yes, and it was pretty delicious. Yeah. I'm not sure if it was volumetrically the largest field blend. I didn't see the receptacle it was in, but I'd taste it. I think it was something. It's 30 wines that were already probably blended to fuck them to make them legitimately tasty in the day. So I don't know the final numbers. Again, like I said, I don't remember much past 7:30. So.
Good for you. That's about the recap I was expecting.
Yeah. It was great. I mean, how great's Adelaide, though? I'll be honest. Like, I haven't spent a lot of time there, but the time that I have spent there has been... I just am constantly fucking blown away by the industry and the quality of cooks and the engagement that everyone seems to have. So, yeah, have me back again, Adelaide, and I'll get fucked up with you all the time.
From a nightlife perspective too, I think Adelaide is actually like one of the funnest funnest cities to DJ in for me at the moment. Like the awesome. Last few times I've been there, it's like people actually go out. And stay out.
The music
out.
Scenes are like amazing, right? Like, I just been listening to that Bad Dreams album that just came out, and I'm fucking just overwhelmed with how great it is. And it's coming out of that little tiny, tight-knit music community, which is, you know, has been ignored for quite a long time, I think, in Australia. And, well, not ignored, but, you know, like, it's just been little Adelaide. And it's certainly not little Adelaide at the moment, I would argue.
Yeah, so I'd agree. And I think, yeah, Michael was kept cracking on about, you know, Adelaide being a sleeping giant. Mm. In terms of food, you know, we've got some super interesting restaurants. Like, you know, and we're lucky to have, you know, guys like Duncan cooking Africola is, you know, fucking restaurant at the minute. There's a new Japanese opening, the Shobo Show with old mates. Yeah. But the guy that Kardashian that owns that restaurant has got a group of 9 really fucking good restaurants now. So there's a great kind of thing going on down there at the moment, and long may it continue because the public are supporting it. So yeah. It's good.
I went down for the first time about a year ago to cook at Africola with Duncan, and even in that year, to see the growth and the growth in the industry itself and in the sort of community is like really amazing. Like, you can eat. I was there for 9 days and I ate really fucking well every day. Yeah. From, you know, Jock's 2 restaurants, Blackwood and Arana, Africola, Pawana.
I've been to Blackwood.
Have you?
Yeah.
Pawana. Enjoy it.
Yeah, Louis Schofield, when he was working there, he got me to come through one time for a gig. It was great.
Cool.
Yeah. I didn't quite get 7:30 jerry can drunk, but I wasn't.
It gets pretty loose in there. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's like, if you're in Adelaide, you can eat really fucking well from breakfast to dinner till, you know.
Do you think that it's like Jock, that it's a certain thing about the lack of restrictions, say for example with boring shit like licensing and the lack of poker machines from Captain Nick Xenophon, those kind of focuses that are making a big difference to the retention or creation of culture, like music and food?
It's a combination of that and also the fact that in Adelaide, you know, our rent prices are so much cheaper than yours, right? So for us in Blackwood, for example, you know, rent's like $2,000 a week or something, you know, and for a reasonable size
space.
And
that's on the main drag.
And that's on the main drag. Yeah. But also that gives guys that are starting out a good crack at being able to do it, whereas in Sydney, I mean, I don't know how you can do it without help. I mean, we don't have any backers or anything, so it's more difficult for us as a business anyway. Forget using native ingredients aside, and it was the hardest possible road to go, but like for someone starting with a crazy idea, if they want to do something fucking totally left field, you can afford to do that and still have a reasonable location and have a chance of survival. But yeah, music, decent politicians, good liquor licensing, sensible liquor licensing, you know, as well. You know, even conversations now about, you know, traditionally in Adelaide, you weren't allowed to stand up and drink outside. So, like, we just go to them and go, can you just talk me through why? You know, and then if there's no decent answer, they change it. You know, it's like you can have actual conversations with people, and I don't think you can do that here so much.
No, you definitely can't.
Was there some weird thing about pop-up restaurant and pop-up bar laws a couple of years ago? Like I know a whole bunch of smaller bars kind of got shut down recently in Adelaide. Is that
No, I mean, they brought small bars in. And right. So small bars have opened, you know, everywhere, which is great. Like I say, it's, you know, guys that are gun bars, barmen or chefs that are working in small places that can afford to go and do it on their own. And that brings a huge variety. You know, it just means there are less mega restaurants like you guys have here and much more smaller ones. And they range from sort of 30 covers through to, like, you know, at the most 100. Really? Do you know what I mean? There's very few restaurants in Adelaide that are over 100 covers.
Yeah.
I like that.
No one really needs to be over 100 covers.
350, though. That's the sweet spot.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. 350. I went out to Mitch that Sunday night in the winery, that dinner, and I just looked outside and I went, I've never cooked a wedding before.
Yeah.
Because that's what
it's basically
like.
What it is.
Like,
yeah.
Fucking 350 people
it was
all
at
once.
Sutherfield Winery. in the barrel room. So it was pretty. It was pretty. Like, it looked pretty.
It looked amazing. Yeah.
But it was literally like
how's
cooking
that?
For a wedding.
350
portions
of covers. Carbonara.
It was super fucking smooth. Actually, like, I was really surprised.
It was amazing.
Did
you
cook? I just did raw fish. Ah. Green olive puree and curry leaf. No cooking, bro.
Yeah.
Marco thought it was terrible.
Did he? What did he say? Did he just look at it and go, like, have one bite and then just put it down? How was it?
Yeah, it was fine.
He actually picked up a fried curry leaf at one point, put it in his mouth, and was like, what was that I just ate? That was a curry leaf, Marco. And then he was like, right.
No bamboo, no good.
But yeah, like, it was actually, like, the guys at Fino did an amazing job to make that
incredible.
Run so smoothly. Like, it was crazy. And to Marco's credit, at the end of that dinner, he was pretty pissed sitting outside. And literally every single person at the dinner formed a fucking conga line to come and take a selfie with him.
And he sat there for two and a half hours.
He sat there and literally took a photo with everybody.
Good man.
I think everyone just had to, like, top his wine glass up every now and then. And, you know, but there was a couple of times that he sort of cracked the shits through the week. But I think maybe because that was right at the start, he was...
I mean, I think, but he was very generous with his time throughout the week, which, you know, he understands. He understands that, you know, he's of a certain ilk in terms of generationally, chef-wise.
Yeah.
But people still look up to him. They still want selfies and spend time with him or whatever, and it kind of makes people's day. And he knows that. He's aware of it, and he's very generous with his time, which you've got to respect.
How long would you have lined for?
For, like, 3 minutes.
Just on your phone the whole time?
Yeah.
He's going to turn up and, like, ah, oh, fuck, out of battery, so I can't even selfie.
pretty much.
Do you want this back?
So we almost perfectly segued into it earlier when you brought up music, Jake, because you had a big announcement recently that we should have had you come on immediately. We tried. I actually really wanted you to come in with Goxie last week. I thought that would have been a classic.
I'm sorry, I missed it. So the big announcement is we're reopening the Lansdowne Hotel. That's fucking amazing.
Wow.
And it's for 5 weeks away, 15th of June, we will have bands playing there, and the lights will be on and the fucking pizza will be cranking out and I'll be fucking shit-faced in the corner.
So the Lansdowne Hotel...
Nervous as fuck and hoping people turn up.
The Lansdowne is a Sydney icon. In fact, it's the first place I ever put on a party at.
Really?
Yeah, wow. I put on a party when I was like 18 called The Awesome Lounge.
Awesome.
And they always had bands playing there on Sundays, and then after there was nothing from like bands till the venue closed, so I couldn't really DJ, but I would just play CDs from their CD players, and it was called The Awesome Lounge, and I got paid like a cut from the bar.
Really?
Yeah. It was sick.
You should come back and do the Awesome Lounge. Absolutely. And I had heaps of CDs. Luckily for you, I've been collecting them.
So this isn't just you and Kenny this time. This is
This is me and Kenny.
But it's one of the rules as well.
No, look, they're doing the booking for us.
Right, cool.
Which is amazing. I think one of the key parts, I think, is you kind of, I don't know if I'm growing up, but I'm getting a little bit more world aware, is that, you, like, whilst great opportunities come, and we do have financial backing, like, I don't have fucking $12 million to buy a fucking huge three-story pub.
Yes.
But, But we took one look at it, knew that we needed like to be live, a live music venue. It wasn't going to be a food and booze operation. Needed to have entertainment. And we also knew that we knew fucking nothing about it. So we got in contact with the people who would be best suited to do it. And, you know, they've got a great history, the Rule Boys of obviously...
The Annandale
Hotel. And, you know, they're just up the road, kind of like sister pubs, kind of, as far as the music scene's concerned. And having them back finishes a, you know, hopefully turns a corner in what's been happening in Sydney culturally, which has been the closure of a lot of pubs and live music venues specifically. And a lot of them, ironically, have turned into food and beverage
yeah.
venues, which is, you know, a mix of good and bad. What can't be ignored is that we need more live music venues. And so, yeah, the Brewer Boys are involved and they're booking the venue upstairs. 250, 300 capacity.
Unreal.
It's a great style room. We're working with all the guys to make sure that the fucking touring bands want to turn up and play there because the fucking sound is amazing. Working with council. And, you know, I don't want to... We need to stop ragging on council, Mary's, et cetera, because we've had the most incredible experience with them, Sydney City Council, in the last kind of... In this period. They contacted us to see what they could do to help.
Crazy. That's unheard of.
What's happening here? And this guy, Hugh, who's one of, you know...
Splashing hot oil in your face make sure you weren't dreaming.
look, mate, they literally have been a dream. And, you know, I got a quote of support from the Lord Mayor.
Wow.
Supporting something I'm doing. Cherry Pickens, like, yeah, Jerry Can Drunk Jake. Well, the Lord Mayor says I'm okay. So fuck you and give me another beer. Look, I'm overwhelmed with that support, and I'm also very overwhelmed with the fucking stress of, you know, I'm a bit nervous about, obviously it's a big thing, but fuck, you live once, huh?
This could be like, you know, I agree with you. This is almost like a turning point. You know, maybe this is the beginning of everybody, you know, stop feeling sorry for themselves and actually trying to make the change that the city needs.
I think so. I think artists have been getting on with it. A lot of musicians have been getting on with it. I think it's time the operators get on with it. It's not about giving up on the Keep Sydney Open movement. It's not about giving up on the lockout areas. It's about kind of adapting and changing and moving and keeping the pressure on by just doing it somewhere else. You know, the problem's not going to change. We're just going to shift it.
No.
So let's keep engaging with what's going on and try to make the venues better and safer, of course. But, you know, there is a point where the people responsible, the police, the councils, local government, etc., they need to engage with this properly too. And you know what? I don't know anything about that shit, really, and I don't want to get political. All I know is how to run venues, and we want to fucking keep it. We want to keep putting the pressure on that side. And the opportunity came up and, we're fucking hitting it. So I've opened 5 weeks and I've got the time to sit and talk to you, Ratbag. So we
must be there.
I'll probably start shitting myself again tomorrow.
So tell me about what's like the music policy. Is there one, or is it just kind of...
No, there's no music policy. The music policy is inclusion and it's inclusive. We're setting it up so that we can patch in 2 extra subs and put on fucking EDM nights upstairs for those kind of that crew. It's certainly not going to be a rock and roll room.
What's the license till?
3 a.m. Monday to Saturday will be open, and then 12 o'clock Sunday.
Okay. Have you started locking in regular club nights yet?
No.
All right. The Awesome Lounge is coming back.
Done. Sunday night. Awesome. I'm fucking in.
To the 10 people that remember it. My parents. Chris Levins is coming back in the club, everybody.
Yeah, 10 was being rather generous. Yeah, wasn't definitely. I think if anyone's going to pull it off, it's you guys.
Well, it's Recon.
Yeah. Jock, can you talk a bit about Arana Foundation?
In short.
I actually don't know anything about it.
Okay.
I didn't get a chance to talk about it in this
essay. Many years ago, I started going out into Indigenous communities and realised how impoverished and shite their life is. And so I wanted to do something about it. And so I had this crazy idea that I would start a foundation that would give back to the communities by using their ingredients but connecting it with a culture at the same time. So the presentation of those ingredients through food would be in a different way than the 1980s, 1990s bush tucker shite that everyone remembers. So yeah,
he's a good fellow.
All great fellows, all had a good crack at it. None of them succeeded, and there was a reason for that. They just failed to tie in any kind of sort of cultural relevance to those ingredients and understand it properly. So That kind of that was sort of 2001, and it took me a long fucking time to get my head around it. And trips to the Amazon, hanging out with Alex Atala, and going out into communities, you know, every month, every other month. I left the kitchen for 6 years to just do more of it. And the reason that we opened Arana was because Australia had kind of got to a stage where it was possible to do the kind of food that we do at Arana now. But also, we needed something to point to, because as much as I was banging on about, oh, you know, I would like to start a foundation and give back, everybody was like, oh, Bush Tucker, shite. Like, you know, you've worked in 3 Michelin-star restaurants, just open a fucking nice restaurant and everyone will come without the native shit. And I just didn't want to do that, so we just kept pushing. And so the reason Arana exists was so we could open the foundation. And sort of 4 years on, Arana's sort of just banging through hundreds of native ingredients, and we're learning loads about them more and more. But we're able to get funding for the foundation off the back of the success of Arana and the type of food that we're doing there, and how we are working with communities to get those ingredients and creating projects in communities. Wild harvest, propagation, hydroponics, aquaponics, etc., that create businesses within communities. So what that's meant essentially is the government that gives a $1.25 million grant to continue doing the work with the foundation, set up a database of native ingredients that doesn't just have the nutritional information and you know, the chemical breakdown of all those native ingredients, but also the culturally relevant information, be that medicinal or, you know, whether it's tied in with a songline, streaming, etc.
That's unreal.
And there's lots of scattered information all around the country, of course, but it's not all in one place, which is just totally ridiculous. So we're shooting for 1,000 ingredients in the first 12 months in that database, open source, and we're doing it together with the University of Adelaide, Botanic Gardens of Australia, and the South Australian Museum. And so that we've got 15 academics and professors working on it. It's really crazy. And so we were out at the university and Wake campus yesterday looking at space for our test kitchen. So all the stuff that we've been doing in my kitchens over the last 15 years will be moved into a sort of test kitchen where, you know, and people go, oh, you know, fucking food lab, we've heard it all before. But, you know, when sort of someone in our community said to me, oh, you can eat mangrove seeds, and then I go to a mangrove tree and take a seed and eat it and spit it out because it is fucking disgusting. And, you know, there's a reason for that, because I haven't learned, you know, how they what they do with it and how they use it. Then to learn at a campfire that, you know, it's cooked at the edge of the fire, salt water poured on top of it and cooked with the ash over sort of, you know, 1 hour, and then you eat it and you go, fucking hell, that tastes delicious. And then you need to go back and go, what happened there? Like, what happened to that? It was totally shit ass on the tree, and then but an hour later it was amazing. The ash is taking the bitterness out. So, you know, for mangrove seeds, and there's a number of other ingredients, we make ash out of blackwood and then put that in water, and we boil mangrove seeds in the ash water. It takes all the astringency and the bitterness out of it, and then we can then use that as an ingredient. Now, I don't need to tell you how many fucking mangrove trees there are in the country. There's a lot of fucking mangrove seeds there, you know? But that can create an actual huge difference to a community if they're gathering those seeds and sending, yeah, fucking hell. And, you know, we've got an ingredient that is truly delicious, you know? So times that by thousands is what you're looking at in terms of ingredients. But, you know, we need somewhere. There was nowhere for me to find out about that information. And that's, I guess, that part of it, the database, the test kitchen, and then the innovation hub is basically the bit that ties all that together. You get all that geeky science information, you get the tests sort of information, you tie that together and make a project in a community that's actually meaningful. You know, freshwater prawns, cherubim, you would use them in a restaurant 100%. Mm-hmm. From spat to 300 gram prawn in 8 months. Can you imagine 300 gram prawn?
Yeah.
It's the size of your forearm, bro. Like, it's fucking, you know, and if we know that we can grow them that big in 8 months, and we can do that in grow tanks or ponds all around the country, yeah, that's a really super valuable industry potentially, and even possibly export. So it's massive. It's really huge. So we've only copped enough funding to keep us going probably for about 18 months. So we're sort of on a scrounge looking for more to keep these academics going and keep going with the database. But And it's super exciting.
The communities.
Well, that's essentially all it is. We, you know, I got told the first community I went into, I got interviewed by all these elders, and then there was just one guy didn't say a fucking word to me. And then when I walked into the community, he just came up to me and grabbed me, looked me in the eye, and he said, "Give back more than you take." That was it. And so that's the fucking mantra that I've held by. It's the mantra that's in our business in Iran and Blackwood. All of our businesses is to do that, whether it's for the chef standing next to you or whether it's in a community.
And so, you know, on that more cultural level, are the elders in these communities passing on the knowledge that comes with, like, with the ingredients and the techniques to younger people in the communities? Or is there a potential, like, you know, possibility of these techniques and recipes being lost?
Oh, the a lot of them have been lost already, and that's the importance of the database. You know, we know that there are anthropologists who have retired and they've got, you know, boxes and boxes and boxes of notes and recordings and drawings in the spare room stacked up to the ceiling, and it contains information that is now lost. And, you know, generally speaking, Aboriginal the Aboriginal people hate sort of hearing that there's a gap, but there is a gap. And, you know, I was in Palm Island a month ago. Uncle Frank there was talking about fish, you know, super traditional. He got taught by his old man and he got taught by his dad, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, fuck, awesome. Like, it's another one of those experiences that you'll never forget. And then we got there to dinner and he was wrapping a fish in tinfoil and putting it in the fire. And it's like, you know, 15 years ago when I was going into communities, you would never have said that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not traditional cooking at all. I know that, but he's, you know, there is a gap there. And so it's been really respectful about acknowledging that there's a gap. Filling in the gaps as well. There's a lot of 40 odd year olds that they go back to country and want to reconnect with their own land, and they struggle a little bit because the information's not so much there anymore. So that database and all that information is just as much for Indigenous people as non.
Yeah, because we talk about it a lot. It gets brought up a lot. Is, you know, that the lack of Australian identity as far as an Australian cuisine. Mm. You know, we so easily just go to like these early colonial recipes. You know,
yeah,
like fucking lamingtons and meat pies and that kind of stuff. It's like, oh, that's Australian food.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's so much that we are so ignorant towards. And especially when you compare it to, you know, like a lot of islander communities where that food and their techniques and that culture is so celebrated and easy to kind of engage with if you're an outsider. Whereas here, it's just like, you know, for hundreds of years, we've been so willfully ignorant of it. I would love to, you know, at some point with yourself, someone else from the Rana Foundation, even potentially someone from a community, an elder, and talk about native foods. Mm. You know, like, I mean, we've all read Dark Emu, and, you know, it's an incredible book. If you haven't read it by Bruce Pascoe, I'm sure you've read it back a few times, but like, you know, I think that's so fascinating to me, and I'm sure there's so much that we can learn that we can then, I don't know, like share. And so when that question does come up of like, what's Australian cuisine, and everyone goes like, oh, you know, salt and pepper squid or whatever, like, you know, it would be so great to have a much less ignorant answer. Well, what the country's been for hundreds of years before we
could. It'd be cool to see if you could tie heaps decent.
Yeah, because I
stuff as well.
I have a music-based charity where we go to community. I've been to Wilcannia about, which is like kind of the borderline of South Australia, Victoria, and New South Wales. So it's very inland, and as you can imagine, the local you know, traditional food knowledge is pretty minimal there. It's pretty hard to kind of to crack and to kind of find out more from, but. Yeah, I mean, and then like Menindee, all of areas, and that kind of, is it the Murray Darling?
Yeah.
Mm.
What's amazing for me is I get asked all the time, you know, what went wrong? Why is all this not sort of at the forefront of gastronomy in Australia? At the end of the day, there was a misunderstanding. The guys jumped off the boat, they came on land, and there was a fucking huge misunderstanding. And that misunderstanding...
That's one way to say it.
Well, it's a very polite way of saying it, yeah.
You know, ultimately, though, that's what if you boil it all back down to what was the cause, there was a misunderstanding, totally, and it's continued and continued and continued, even today, where it's still the same.
Mm.
You know, people look at an Aboriginal guy with, you know, one front tooth and go, oh, fucking drunk, you know, he got in a fight, whatever. You know, it's like, fucking, he's an initiated man. It's, and from a gastronomy point of view, it is really interesting because their connection with the land that comes through food is really, really sophisticated. And, you know, I mean, hearing them talk about, you know, cooking stingrays, you know, Lily comes out on the beach, they know that the stingrays have got fat livers, you know, and they then cook the fish over the fire. take the livers out before that and then mix it afterwards. You know, they're not eating because they're hungry. There's a huge amount of deliciousness and talking about different types of wood and whatnot. So it's not, you know, a lot of people just think they're just eating because they're fucking hungry. But, you know, make no mistake about it. Some of the stuff that we've heard over the last 15 years is incredible, and it's all tied in with whether it's delicious or not.
Yeah, well, there's definitely something that I'd love to explore in full depth over the course of a much more, much longer time than we've given it today on the episode. But if we want to learn more about the Urana Foundation, where do we go?
The website?
Yeah.
UranaFoundation.org. The UranaFoundation.org, I think it is. Or come in the restaurant and eat and, you know, let us tell you a few stories and walk through it. And the usual social media bollocks, I'm always available through there.
Unreal. What's that?
Zonfrilo. Okay. It's just my surname. Okay. Pretty much everything.
Yeah. The surname that you refused to let me say in the beginning of the episode.
It's because it's funny to hear you fuck it up like everyone else's.
Jake, when does the Lansdowne reopen? 5 weeks?
5 weeks.
5 weeks. 5 weeks. June 15th, we'll have our first show, and that'll be the first night that we're pumping out everything. And we'll do a couple of nights for people in the lead up. And if the lights are on and you see people drinking, come on in, say hi. We won't be, there's no guest list for those. But yeah, the 15th of June, I'm fucking scared and happy.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
We didn't even talk about the food.
Fucking pizza.
It'll be shit.
It's gonna be gross. No, we're doing pizza.
Did you put fucking pasta on a pizza last week?
Yeah.
You, if you can't, you have no leg to stand on.
You should stop talking to me.
If you look on Mitch's Instagram, he made a carbonara pizza.
Pizza. That sounds fucking delicious.
The comments thing was like so. All these people that have been like bullied by Mitch into what a carbonara is, just being like, what the fuck is this, Mitch?
I wanted to cook the pizza base and then put the carbonara on top of it afterwards. Pussy, being drunk and aggressive Finnish man that he was on the night, decided no, we had to cook it, and cooking it fucked it. And I put a quote from Clayton after Clayton ate it. He said, "This is fucking horrible." So yeah, I don't have a leg to stand on, Jackie.
Maybe next year you can try it your way and see if Clayton thinks it's any less fucking horrible.
See, I told you it was going to work out. If you had just done it my way.
Of course, you can find Jake sometimes at Mary's at two locations around Sydney or the Unicorn Hotel. But more likely Lansdowne's where you're
going to
be.
Yeah, and if I'm holding a jerry can, just fucking walk away. Trust me.
Turn around.
Just fucking
song,
walk.
Song of the week.
Don't question, just walk.
We're going to have to, who are we going to ask?
Both of them. One each.
No, we've got one song. We're going to have to.
Jock, because Jake will come back.
Yeah, okay, cool. All right, Jock, what I do with the final sign off, you got to think of a song for us to finish the episode on.
Yes.
Any song. Any song.
5446 was my number. Toots and the Maytals.
Okay. Classic.
Never heard of
Toots or the Maytals.
I got probably have when I hear it.
I saw when I was.
I'm not familiar with
when that. I was 19. I went and saw them at the Enmore Theatre. Toots and the Maytals and Burning Spear played the same night, and I got so stoned that I didn't even open my eyes for the entirety of Burning Spear's set. But I just felt it. Just this insane bass. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
I like don't spend $70 on a ticket and then get really stoned because you might not remember it.
Sounds like you remember it perfect.
You can find The Mitchin online, facebook.com/TheMitchin, or send us an email, themitchinpodcast@gmail.com. I'm at LevDog, LevDawg, on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And you can find Mitch there too, at Instakrill on Instagram and Krillin on the Run on Twitter. We're going to launch a Patreon in the next week. So if you've ever dreamt of supporting this little show, you'll be able to, and there'll be some pretty cool rewards.
Give me your money.
That was me start talking. Give it to me instead. Thank you so much to our guests, Jock and Jake.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll see you next week at the Mitchin Table. I won't do that.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.